Why does every recipe I try need 18 ingredients, including a jar of something paste I'll never use again but will sit in my fridge for 9 months? I just want dinner in the oven, fast. That's why I love Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals. They send you fresh ingredients that are already chopped. All you do is put it all together and bake. That's it. No chopping, no weird leftovers, just delicious, easy-to-make meals. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with someone you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One-on-One, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
After my first season coaching with them, one of the seniors had reached out and said just what a memorable experience it was for her in her senior year to have me as a coach and a new coach on the coaching staff. And, you know, that feedback to me was really eye-opening that I could make an impact like that on somebody else's life.
And our guest this week is Kate Stopford. She is the head field hockey coach at Division III Immaculata University. And Kate, thanks so much for coming in studio.
Matt, thank you so much for having me.
So we are recording this end of February. What's life like now? What's the focus as far as field hockey is concerned?
Field hockey-wise, we're focusing on getting back out on the turf and doing some non-traditional work. The spring season in Division III is much more laid back than Division I and Division II. So right now, a lot of the focus is just regrouping and staying in communication with the returning members of the team, making sure that they're okay academically. And then when we have the availability, get back on the turf and get back to work.
What goes into the spring season? Are you guys playing other schools? Is it kind of a practice type feel, exhibition type feel? What is the build up to in the spring?
Most of the spring is a lot of skill based practice. So at the Division III level, we're allowed to have 1 day of competition. And within that 1 day, we can play an equivalent of 2 games. So this upcoming spring, we're going to go to a play day hosted by Moravian College, and we're going to play a couple different local schools up there. That will be about mid April. So until then, it'll just be on individual and team development, gives a chance to the players that might not have seen the field as much in the fall to really expand on their growth and skill set in the off season.
Now, 2024, your competition season is in the fall, and you guys had a really nice year, one of the best years in school history. How satisfying was that? I think you guys got to the conference tournament final.
Yeah, we did make it to the conference tournament final. It's the best record I've had as a head coach, and it's the first winning record since the 1980s. And that success and like that feeling of satisfaction isn't so much for myself, but it's for my players who were the ones that came in, especially those seniors that came in as freshmen right after COVID and made it their mission to make the next 4 years of their collegiate field hockey experience the best possible. So for them to be able to end it on such a high note was truly amazing to watch.
In addition to that senior leadership and that senior group, what else kind of set this team apart? Were there things from a physical, from a skill standpoint that this group did maybe better than some teams in the past?
Yeah, I think we had a really wide variety of skill sets. So in the past, you know, I've been at Immaculata since 2014. I've had amazing players every year with individual skill. I think what set this team apart was that they were able to combine their individual skill with the overall dimension and importance of a unified team. So sometimes they had to set aside their individual ambition or skill to combine it with, you know, someone else on their team or the bigger picture idea that the team was looking to get, and then collaborate with their teammates, with the coaches. My coaching staff are also two Immaculata alumni who went through the program for 4 years, had some successful seasons, had some not so successful seasons, but never made it this far. So I think their encouragement to the players too really enhanced the team and got us to where we finished this past fall.
So much in college sports has changed over the last 4 or 5 years. I think most of the focus is obviously NIL, transfer portal, focusing on Division I. Football, basketball is what gets most of the headlines. But has life changed much for you? Have those changes trickled down to where you're dealing with stuff, maybe not day to day, but stuff's coming across your desk now that 5 years ago was just not really something you had to worry about?
Not too much. I have a feeling that, you know, as Division I continues to make more changes to their roster size and their scholarships and whatnot, that there will be a trickle down effect to some of those players that are looking for more of an opportunity to play and less of an opportunity to just be on the team or to be at that school in general. I would say the biggest impact has just been from the extended years of eligibility after COVID. The fall sports haven't been impacted too much, but I know, you know, the spring sports, they've got, you know, lacrosse, baseball, they've got players right now who should have graduated 2 years ago, but because of the eligibility and the season extension, they're still playing. So for me, there was a little bit of an overlap from the COVID extra eligibility year, but otherwise not too much.
What was your introduction to field hockey growing up?
I was very reluctant to play field hockey. I mean, when I was growing up, there was not a lot of rec hockey. There wasn't a lot of youth programs. I grew up in Westchester, and I remember my mom said, you're going to do intramural field hockey in sixth grade. And I dragged my feet and I did not want to do it. And I went anyway. And it was, you know, a middle school grass field. It's probably not anything great to write home about. But I did love my experience. And I went on from there to play, you know, through middle school, through high school. And then I played in college at Widener.
Was there a reason you were reluctant other than sixth graders don't like change and, you know, somebody tells you to do something, you're kind of like, eh, I don't know. Like, was there anything about the sport or just like you just weren't interested in the moment?
Yeah, I don't know that I knew too much about the sport. You know, for my introduction to field hockey was in elementary school in gym class, and we had plastic sticks and yarn balls, and we played on the gym floor. So to me, it didn't really seem that much different than floor hockey or some of the other sports that we were exploring in elementary school. And in addition to that, I was kind of thinking, this is kind of stupid, to be honest. And that's kind of a lot of people's perspective on field hockey. They're like, why can you only use one side of the stick? How come they only make stick for right-handed players? Why are there all these whistles? If you don't know the sport and you don't play the sport and you're a little bit more removed from it, it's harder to appreciate why that sport is so fun to be a part of. But like I said, I think it was just a combination of that was my introduction and then my mom telling me I was supposed to do it.
So then what does resonate with you in middle school with the sport, that it goes from something you have to do to something you want to do?
Yeah, I think just the natural competitive drive that I have and working as a team and being able to go out on the field and develop and display the skills. So I had great coaches in middle school, which I don't think necessarily is always the case, but I had great coaches and they showed me the proper way to play. They showed me the proper way to be a teammate and a leader. And those kind of values stuck with me from a young age. And then, like I said, just naturally being competitive, I found it a more difficult sport than soccer. So for me, I was ready to excel in that area. And it also being a smaller size team than the soccer team, I liked kind of being set apart. At that time, field hockey was definitely still more unique and less common than soccer was.
Talking about the rules and the whistles, how long did it take you to understand and kind of catalog the rules of the game where you understood what the whistles were for and what you had to do and how to take advantage of things and stuff like that?
I remember specifically being in high school and having a coach point out that what I was doing was good because I was using the multiple fouls and whistles to my advantage. And I thought to myself, oh, okay. So really it became a tactic to not necessarily, I still was working on my skill, but I was also trying to figure out, okay, let me see where these other players are on the other team. How can I get them to foul, or how can I create a foul so that I can maintain possession? with field hockey, it's one of those things where you could, as a parent or a spectator, you watch one whole season and you finally have got the hang of it. And then in between seasons, they come out with a rule change. So just ever changing. But the more that you stay in it, the easier it is to understand.
When did you figure that field hockey was going to be part of your life longer term? I don't mean you're going to go into coaching necessarily, but that you were going to be able to play it in high school, that you were going to be able to play it in college.
I think I just, you know, I had that natural draw to it as a sport and I wanted to keep playing. And to be honest, like, I can't sit here and tell you that I was this really dedicated student athlete, even in high school. I mean, I did not want to play my senior year. I just, to me, going to preseason for 3 weeks was not something I wanted to do when I was a senior. And my coaches really encouraged me to come back for that senior year. And when I did, I reflected back on that and thought to myself, wow, that could have been the worst decision I ever made. So when I was a senior, I decided I wanted to play in college. And I was looking at, you know, different schools in the area. And I decided on Widener. But I didn't actually play my freshman year or my sophomore year. So my sophomore year, I had reached out to the coach. And I said I'd be interested in coming to the team. And she accepted me right away. No questions asked. We had been in the recruiting process when I was a senior in high school. So she knew who I was. I just had decided not to play. And then, again, it was reflecting back. I was thinking, what did I do my freshman and sophomore year? But I kind of worked up the courage and joined the team as a sophomore, which was difficult because there were people who have been on the team for 4 years. There are people that have been on the team for 2 years. I was just this new person randomly in the spring, like this time now, when I was a sophomore. And after playing for 3 seasons at Widener, I just really liked it. You know, I liked sharing the joy of field hockey with others. And that's kind of when I knew I wanted to coach and I wanted to continue to stay involved with field hockey after I graduated.
So you said your senior year, like having to go through 3 weeks of preseason, that was enough to almost turn you off.
Yeah.
What was it that first year and a half at Widener? Was it just you were interested in other things? You know, it just wasn't a priority. Like, were there other things on the table that you were focusing on? Or
yeah, I wasn't really focusing on anything. I think I was just at, you know, when I decided to go to Widener, I decided, okay, I'm just going to go and focus on academics. And then we had some like personal, like, you know, health issues with my family. So then I actually transferred home and I went to Immaculata for one semester. And then I was going to play there. And then I changed my mind again. And this is where my life story is just like the biggest 2 years of indecisiveness ever. But at the end of the road is where I got back to Widener and I decided to play.
Are there times, because I have moments in my life that at the time I just treated as another decision, but you look back and you go, oh my God, that was like a major fork in the road. Does it almost feel like it was somebody else making the decision when you look back on it?
Yeah, I look back and I think to myself, what in the world was I thinking? Because now I can't imagine my life without field hockey. I coach field hockey. I continue to play field hockey on various different adult teams, indoor, outdoor. Both of my younger sisters played field hockey, and it truly is almost a part of my life in every regards. And I think looking back at it, what it has helped me do, though, is that when I get players myself now who are someone who's been in college for a couple years, but they haven't played and they're really nervous about starting now, it's a really good personal way to relate with them and let them know that it's never too late to begin something new if that's what their passion is and what they want to do.
Is it possible that the time away, and this was not by design, obviously, but helped get you to where you are now because it rekindled a fire, made you appreciate what goes into it because maybe you weren't doing it as opposed to if you had gone straight through? Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think, you know, it's helped me appreciate the role that like a coach and a mentor can play. Like I said, my coaches in high school, they, you know, they encouraged me and they reeled me back in and they didn't hold anything against me for me thinking that I didn't want to play. They just brought me back on the team, treated me with the same expectations as everybody else. And then the same thing when I got to Widener, my coach at Widener, she was, okay, you're coming in. I don't care if you're a sophomore, if you're a freshman, if you're a junior, the expectations were the same. The playing field was level for everybody. And I was treated the same as every other player. So to me, like that role of a coach really was impactful to me and helped me to, you know, to graduate and to continue on and make me realize that's what I wanted to do with my life later.
When you start playing again that spring of your sophomore year, how long did it take you to get to where you needed to be as a player? Because, you know, that's a long time to not be in the grind of, you know, playing a collegiate sport. Like, were you able to ramp up quickly, or did it take some time? Did you realize your skills had eroded a little bit, or was there any of that?
I didn't really have any deterioration in my skills. I mean, I was a little bit rusty, but again, like we talked about earlier, the spring being this opportunity for personal enhancement and growth, it was a great time for me to join the team because we weren't practicing every single day. We weren't competing twice or three times a week. So I got to know the team better. I got to know the coach better. I got to, you know, just loosen myself up, get a stick back in my hand. And it was a little bit hard of a transition my first full season, just coming into a program where there were established starters, there were established plays and formations, and I was not a part of that in the prior two seasons. So coming out of a high school career where I was part of all of those things, it was a transition to be on the sideline. But we, you know, that first year, it is a transition year, but we got through and I was able to prove myself, and then my junior and senior year were great.
You were a midfielder, right?
Yeah.
Scout yourself as a player. Like, if you were playing against yourself in college, what would be going on the whiteboard of the scouting report?
Probably that I'm all over the place. And I mean, that's why I love mid, is because you can be a part of offense and defense. You really are a playmaker on the field. You might not get as many stats, but for me, stats were never important. It was about being where the ball is, being able to read the other team. I think I have a really good field IQ of where I can intercept a pass, where I can pass it to. Like, I love seeing my open teammates. I love working with others and setting up plays. And just being that centralized player, you get to communicate a lot to the other players around you. So really, I think I'd be, you know, that all over the place. Just don't let that girl get too close because she's kind of annoying.
Given the journey you took at Widener, when was the first moment you felt like you belonged? And I don't mean with the group. I don't mean like socially, but I mean like you made a play or something happened where you were like, oh yeah, that's what it's all about.
So this was, we were playing William Patterson University, and it was a home game, and we had gone into overtime with them. So in field hockey, when you go into overtime, you go down to only 7 players. So you have 6 players on the field and your goalie. So I'm not sure why that's the overtime rules, but you basically cut your field in half. So it's a lot of work. And we were on the field. I had not started the overtime, but I was subbed in. And while I was subbed in, one of the seniors on the team and captains on that team at the time was really frustrated. And I forget if she was frustrated at the other team or at the official or what, but she screamed out the F word and she got a yellow card. And I was thinking to myself, oh man, now our work got even harder because now we're down to 5 players on the team. But like I mentioned earlier, my ability to kind of intercept passes is something I'm really good at. And in that moment, the other team had the ball and they were trying to work it out of their defensive end. And I remember intercepting it, sending the pass into the circle, and it created an offensive corner for our team. My coach told me to insert the corner. I inserted the corner to the top of the circle, and the player on my team took a shot, and I deflected it into the goal for the overtime win. And that was my first collegiate goal ever. And that at that moment, like seeing my teammate run over to me with just like so much joy and happiness, and knowing that we did that after being down a player and kind of facing a really, really long game of field hockey, and we were just so exhausted, I was like, yes, this is amazing. You know, and again, stats were not something that I even cared about, but it was my first collegiate goal, and I'll always remember it.
Any other great memories from your playing days?
Oh, my friends from the team always make fun of me because I do have such great memories and I remember so many things in detail. And they say, how do you remember all that? But I remember my senior year, we had 3 games in a row maybe that we went into overtime. We beat Swarthmore in overtime. I had scored the tying goal with no time left on the clock. And Swarthmore, I think they were up like 2-1 or 3-2, whatever it was. And I scored a tying goal. And we went out for the 7v7. And one of my closest friends on the team, Colleen, her and I, my coach said, okay, as soon as the ball starts, you're going to run up to our forward line into our offense. And we're just going to try and get behind their defense and score. And me and Colleen took off before the ball was even touched. So our team immediately lost the ball and our coach was not happy. So we were like, oh, crap. But, you know, we still worked it out. We ended up getting the ball back. Colleen beat a defender on Swarthmore. She took a shot. The goalie saved it. I got the rebound. I took a shot over the goalie. It hit the post and then rebound out. And by this time, Colleen had come up and she was able to finish into the cage for a goal. And that was another just like key highlight. And we have, you know, just some great pictures from that game, too. But
we need to take a break. We will have more with Kate Stopford in just a couple of minutes, but want to remind you that One-on-One with Matt Leon is sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Now's the time for a great deal on a new Honda. It's time to drive smarter with high-tech features and excellent reliability. Check out the Honda Civic, Accord, or HR-V. For a limited time, well-qualified buyers can get a 4.9% APR on a 2025 Civic or a 3.9% APR on a 2025 Accord or HR-V. Contact your local Honda dealer today. See dealer for financing details. Excludes Civic S1 and Type R. And now on One-on-One with Matt Leon, let's get back to our conversation with Kate Stopford, head field hockey coach at Division III Immaculata University. So when does coaching enter the fray? Is this something as you're playing it develops, or did you just need the game to still be a part of your life? Like, what door opens to get you into coaching?
I think it was partially very informal coaching of my youngest sister. So she's 10 years younger than me. She was much better at field hockey than I was. She started at a much younger age. She played for WC Eagles, and then she went on to play for 2 years at University of New Hampshire. But when she was younger, she was at all of my games. She would, you know, take my stick, take my teammate's stick, try and work things out. And so very informally, I coached her, and watching her grow as a player really made me appreciate the sport even more, to see that development at a younger age. It never really crossed my mind that I wanted to coach, but after I graduated and, you know, I was just looking for things to do and trying to still figure out my life, an opportunity came to me to be an assistant coach at Cardinal O'Hara in Springfield, and that's where I started my coaching career.
What was it about coaching? You talked about, you know, seeing the growth in your sister. Was there a moment early on where you were like, yeah, this is where I'm going to be for the foreseeable future?
I think when I started at O'Hara, I was working with a really strong team. In 2012, we made it to the Philadelphia Catholic League Championship, but we lost. And then in 2013, we made it to the Philadelphia Catholic League Championship and we won. The coaching staff at O'Hara was great. They had been there for many years and they had a really strong team, but there were still a lot of players that needed that individual attention, that redirection. And after my first season coaching with them, one of the seniors had reached out and said just what a memorable experience it was for her in her senior year to have me as a coach and a new coach on the coaching staff. And, you know, that feedback to me was really eye-opening, that I could make an impact like that on somebody else's life and their future and their memories of high school field hockey. And that's when I was like, yeah, like this is what I'm supposed to be doing, is helping others, sharing my passion for the sport with others. I love communicating like with parents, with the players. And so all of those things, you know, I'm a people person. So being able to be a people person and share something that I truly love is the perfect spot for me.
So you said 12 and 13 Cardinal O'Hara, and then in 14, you come to Immaculata as the assistant, correct?
Yes. Yep. I was an assistant in 2014.
Was it a much different situation going from high school to college as far as coaching, or as an assistant, you didn't maybe yet right away have to deal with a lot of the things that set college coaching apart? Like, did it feel different?
It's not, it doesn't feel too much different, especially with it being Division III, too. A lot of the timeline is the same as you might come across in high school. The practices are generally in the afternoon. The season is generally the same months. It's not a ton of change. I think the biggest change was the absence of parents at the collegiate level. So in high school, you know, the parents were still very involved. They come up and talk to you. And not that the parents in college don't, but there's a definite change in the parents' involvement with their players' participation on the team. And being the assistant, yeah, I didn't have to do a lot of the recruiting. I did some recruiting for the head coach at the time, but I didn't do a lot of the recruiting. Practice plans, the head coach mostly did, and she just shared them with us. So I didn't have to really develop any practice plans. And, you know, mostly I just went along with what she said. I felt like I was still in a position where I needed to learn how to be a coach, so it was a good first season for me to have.
Was recruiting overwhelming at first?
I wouldn't say it's overwhelming. It's definitely a skill that you need to develop. And, you know, being able to kind of like work that fine line between trying to sell your program and sell your school and encourage student athletes to come to your school versus being overbearing and kind of pushy. It was a fine line to, it could be a fine line to figure out. I definitely am not a salesperson, so I just try to be as genuine as I can and bring in players and families who are interested in our school for what it is, right? And it's a smaller school. It's in the suburbs. It's got a beautiful campus. It does have a, you know, a Catholic-based tradition, although that's not what it's all about. And we have some really unique majors. So kind of finding like those special niches that are appealing to the student athletes is kind of how I've had to work it out.
So you said that first year as an assistant, you were still kind of in a learning mode.
Mm-hmm.
2015, you take over. What is that situation like? How does the opportunity come about? Did you feel ready? Do you look back and go, oh my gosh, I can't believe that I did it at that point? Like, kind of take me through that.
Yeah, I think 2015 was still a learning year, even though I was the one that was in charge. And I mean, it was a rough year. I think we only won two games. I had, you know, we had a lot of returners from the 2014 season. I had a couple of new freshmen who had committed and come into the program. And I wasn't really sure what I was supposed to do, to be honest. I was thinking, okay, should I, you know, what is my focus? At that time, like, my coaching philosophy and my focus was still a little bit uncertain. So in my mind, I was like, okay, well, I just have to make these players work as hard as they can and win as many games as I can. And if they don't win, it's a bad, you know, it doesn't look good for me. So it wasn't a great season by any means, but it definitely was a learning season. And one that I kind of wished I had still had a mentor for going through it. But, you know, I did what I could and made it work.
Was the idea of getting the head coaching job, like, was that something that was, I don't even want to say on the table, but kind of in the air, that was a possibility? Or was this something that, oh, okay, oh, sure, yeah, let's do it?
Yeah, definitely the latter. I wasn't opposed to it, but it wasn't necessarily something that when I came in 2014, they were like, okay, here's a potential timeline. So it was kind of abrupt that I was given the opportunity and the promotion to be the head coach. And I didn't want to pass it up, though. You know, I enjoyed coaching too much to, you know, to risk losing it. And so I just decided to take it head on and see where it goes.
Was it an adjustment for you going from assistant to head coach within the same program? And I know you were only assistant for a year, but I feel like in most situations, the dynamic between the players and the assistant is different than the dynamic with the players to the head coach. A lot of times the assistant coaches are kind of buffers, sounding boards. Kids will say things to you that they maybe don't want to say or can't say to the head coach. And then that position flips. Was there any awkwardness, or did you have to find your footing when it came to that dynamic once you took over?
I wouldn't say that there was any awkwardness, but I would say that was part of what I was still learning as a head coach in 2015. So those returning players, they definitely respected me. But you're right, there was kind of that different dynamic from me being the assistant coach. I think what helped that was that we did have that spring season where I was technically the head coach and could work with those players in the off season before the real season started in 2015. So it helped a little bit alleviate some of that maybe awkwardness that could have popped up. But mostly it was just me learning how to facilitate a team, facilitate a coaching staff. I hired a new assistant coach, and then just learning all of like the rules and regulations of our conference. I was still learning the NCAA rules, even though I played. It's not that I knew all the rules. So there was a lot of areas that I was experiencing.
Past just the strategy and personnel, especially at Division III, there are a lot of things that fall on the head coach that I think people probably don't appreciate. A lot of things that for players just happen. Oh, well, that's the meal. That's how it works. Like, I'm just supposed to get fed now. Somebody has to put all that in motion, and a lot of times it's the head coach. Like, how long did it take you to fully get your arms around all the responsibilities that you were now responsible for as the head coach of a field hockey program?
I mean, I think it took a solid like 3 years, if I'm being honest. So like, I had the title, but really all those responsibilities and how people viewed me, it took a little bit of time. What helped me through that was having a consistent coaching staff who was there to support me, and then having players who just had that natural leadership and kind of, you know, helped me not like to feel more comfortable, but to almost like reassure, like, listen, like, we know, like, you're the coach, you have to make these decisions, or we want to ask you because you're the coach. And I don't know, it just, it took a little bit of time, but I would say definitely the past 5 to 6 years have been a solid, like, all right, I know what I'm doing.
Do you remember the first time that you felt like you made an impact as a coach on a game, like a decision you made, a substitution you made, whatever it is, something you guys worked on specifically in practice came to fruition? Do you remember the first time that that bore fruit and what that felt like?
I don't know that I remember the exact first time, but looking back at even, you know, when I was playing at Widener, Widener plays Immaculata every year. And when I was at Widener, if we had a game against Immaculata, it was almost like, okay, this is going to be an easy win. And that was our perception. And I know that's the perception of, you know, the teams, a lot of the teams coming into our program. So I, like, made it kind of this mission that, like, you know, we're really going to narrow down on these teams that think that they can beat us to make sure that, like, they're not coming in and they're winning because their assumptions were right. If they win, they have to earn the win, but let's maybe have an upset. And I think it was 2016 or 17. We won the first 3 games in a row, and Widener was one of the teams that we beat, and we beat them 2-0 at home, and it was a great feeling, and the girls felt great afterwards. And so I don't know that it was, like, my individual decision-making, who I put on the field. But I think part of it was just, like, instilling that mindset in the team that, listen, just because you've lost to this team for the past 10 seasons doesn't mean that we need to continue this trend of losing to them. They might have been a better team in the past, but we can be a better team this year. And just changing that mindset, I think, helped a lot.
To that point, you know, you talk about how when you played at Widener, Immaculata was easy. This winning season was a long time coming. I feel like, as someone who's covered sports, you know, knows a lot of coaches, there's only so much a coach can do to teach a group how to win. You can give them the tools, you can diagram stuff, you can try to put them in the right mind space. At the end of the day, they're the ones that have to make the play in a tie game. They're the ones that have to find a way to stop momentum, to bring the game back. Do you agree with that? And what is that like as a coach, having to kind of seed that to the players and hope that they find the way to put it together?
I 100% agree with that. And that's something that my assistant coaches and I talk about a lot, is we do give them the tools, we give them the drills, we give them the direction, we give them everything we possibly can as a coach. But at the end of the day, if they don't have that natural urge to be competitive, to play with passion, to be a teammate, to be a team player, to want to win, and that's where some of those players stand apart from others. So when we develop those 10 starters, we're not just developing them on individual skill. We're developing them on the mindset, too. Like, who's going to go out and they're going to play a full 60 minutes without ever giving up? Who really wants to win? Who wants to make it into postseason? Because we've had players where they get to the end of the season and it's like, oh, I hope we don't make it. And if that's your mindset, then you shouldn't be part of the team. So we always say, like, it's 2 feet in. That's it. That's the only way you can be part of the team, is 2 feet in. You can't have 1 foot in and 1 foot out. It's got to be a full commit. And that means that you are fully committed as a player, as a teammate, as a support person. And you're there for the long haul, whether we make it to playoffs or we don't make it to playoffs, whether you're playing on the field or you're not playing on the field. If you're going to be committed to being part of this team, the role as a team member might be different from the role of your teammate, but it still is equally important. In 2023, it was the last season that Cabrini University had a team, and we have never beat Cabrini in all the years that I've been a part of the program. And we got to the end of the game. It was 0-0. There was 13 seconds left on the clock, and we managed to get a corner. And I'm telling you, Matt, we had not even made it past the 25-yard line into our offensive end the entire game. But defensively, we held them off. So we finally got this opportunity, and I knew the players on the field were the ones, you know, they had played the full 60 minutes. They did not give up. The reason that we were 0-0 with 13 seconds left was because those 10 players made it happen. And as a coach, I had no idea what offensive corner to call. I didn't, because we hadn't had any other opportunities. I had no idea how Cabrini's defense was going to come out. And I pulled my 2 senior captains over at the time, and I said, you guys have to pick something that you know will result in a goal. And so they said, okay. And they huddled up real quick. They told the rest of the team. They got in their formation and they sent the ball out on the offensive corner and we scored and we won the game 1-0. And that is, you know, that is a true demonstration of two players. And I mean, the rest of them too, but they wanted to win. They weren't going to settle for a tie. They weren't going to settle for overtime. They wanted to win and they put their heads together and they're like, okay, this is what we're doing. And it was, you know, one of the biggest highlights, I think, as a coach to be able to see your players make that commitment on the field to finish it and not settle. You know, they kept going.
Result aside, were you surprised at what they decided on?
Yeah, I mean, I really had no clue. I was like, okay, are we going to do a straight shot? Are we going to do a slip? Are we going to send it back to the inserter? I mean, we have a lot of different corners that we do, and a lot of them are very successful when they're done correctly. And at the same time, I was thinking, these girls are exhausted. We're now at, you know, 59 minutes of the game that have been played, and do they have the strength and the urgency to keep this ball in and try to finish with a goal? And they just, I think, they ended up picking a slip to the left for a shot, and my senior lifted the ball up, and it just went right in. It was beautiful.
How would Kate the player respond to Kate the coach?
Oh, well, it depends. Is it Kate the coach in like 2015 or is it Kate the coach now? I think pretty good. I definitely, and I'll be the first to admit that, you know, my mindset as a coach has definitely changed over the last 10 seasons as well. And I contribute some of that, like not only to my own experience, but feedback that I've gotten from my players, feedback and support that I've gotten from my assistant coaches. Like I mentioned, both of my assistant coaches are alumni, so I coached Meredith until she graduated in 2017, and then I coached Lane until she graduated in 2020. And when Meredith was a player, I was a much different coach. I think I was a lot less rational. I was a little bit more like, okay, well, I'm the coach, and I'm going to say it how it is. But I've developed myself into a coach that is more open to feedback and wants to incorporate things that the players will want to do. And my coaches too. I mean, I try and talk to my coaches before and after every practice just to evaluate like drills, performance, and if they notice anything that's off. So having like that extra support group is great. So I think as a player reacting to myself as a coach now, I would be much more appreciative and responsive to how I kind of talk to the girls and control the team.
That change in your coaching style, was it something you proactively realized it's not working? What did somebody say something to you? Like, was there a moment or was it just kind of a gradual, you know, we all grow and adjust as we stay in a position over time? Like, was there a aha moment or was it just you moved along as you gained more experience?
I think it was just the growth of myself as a coach and seeing some of the success of other coaches around me and kind of looking at how they facilitate their teams, how they use their assistant coaches. I'm guilty of wanting to do everything myself. So even just using and utilizing my assistant coaches to contribute the most that they could to the program was difficult for me at first because I was so like just in this individual mindset that like, oh no, I'll do it. Like, oh no, I don't want to bother you. And like, I think of it as like this task that they wouldn't want to do, but really it's a task that they're open to doing and they want to do it. That's why they're there coaching, just like I was there coaching as an assistant. So kind of pulling them in and dividing what I had to do and delegating them with different things, I think helped kind of, I don't know the word to say it, but it helped even things out. And I was able to focus more on, you know, the team as a whole, including the coaches, and not just the success as the team. And I think how I define success changed as well. In the beginning, it was, to me, success was how many games did I win? As time went on, I realized, okay, success isn't about how many games you win. It's how does the program progress? How do the individual players progress? How are they coming back? Is my retention good? If I had a team that they were like, nope, I'm out, like this is terrible, then I really would have been like, whoa, that's a wake-up call. Luckily, we haven't had anything like that. But seeing the players come back and seeing them want to continue engaging in field hockey and then seeing now, even as like alumni, they come back for the alumni games. They come back to help me coach. They come back to watch the current team play. They're involved. Like that to me is the success of the program.
Love to win or hate to lose?
I hate to lose when it's a game I feel like I should have won. and I hate losing when we're ahead. So if we're ahead and I'm thinking like, all right, this is great, there is nothing more frustrating than being ahead in a game and then having the other team come back and win. But I think sometimes, though, losing is important. You know, we could be on a winning streak and the girls could be on this like great high and everything's great. Our team's doing awesome. And sometimes it is good to have that loss to bring us back down to reality and recognize like, okay, well, we can't just kind of glide by. We have to continue grinding at practice. We have to continue working hard and we have to continue developing. Like, we can't just plateau.
Final question. If someone is watching your team, around your team, around your program, not just the team, but kind of everything that goes along with it, what is the most important thing you want them to take away from their experience with Immaculata Field Hockey?
I want them to take away the fact that the players are smiling when they're there, to be honest. Like, they're smiling because they're playing a sport that they love. They're smiling because they're surrounded by teammates that are supportive. They have a good coaching staff. They feel like they're in a safe space. They feel like they have the room to develop and grow as a player and as a student themselves. And just like, I want them to see like, wow, this team has a lot of energy. I want them to see, wow, this team is really focused. This team, you know, looks like they're supportive. They play as a unit. So those different aspects, not just, oh, wow, their team's really good. That girl has really great stick skills. That girl has a great shot. And I also don't want them to be like, oh, that coach just, you know, talks the whole time. I want them to see like my energy on the sideline and the energy of the girls on the field is a good energy. It's just this bubble of our community of field hockey that it's special to us. Like, when we're on the field, like, we're a family and we enjoy each other's time. We enjoy playing field hockey. And at the end of the day, we would love to win. We would love to win. And making it to the championship was an extremely amazing accomplishment for our team. But when all of those girls leave, my seniors who leave from this year, like, I want them to look back and say, like, that was a great 4 years. It was a lot of fun. We had a lot of energy. Like, my team is a real team.
Kate Stopford, thanks so much for coming in.
All right. Thanks, Matt.
And that will do it for this episode of One-on-One with Matt Leon, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. Want to thank Kate Stopford for being our guest this week, the head field hockey coach at Immaculata University. Also want to thank her for coming in studio for our chat. Now, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, do us a favor, leave us a rating and a review. You can follow the show on X at One-on-One Pod. You can follow me there as well at MattLeon1060. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to check us out again next week when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.